Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, Donald Trump has finally laid out his plan to deal with abortion rights here in the United States, and it unfortunately caused him and Lindsey Graham to, I guess, end their relationship, at least for now. I'll bring you all the details. We have a federal judge that has sent a very strong message to Republicans, telling them to stop downplaying what happened on January 6th, 2021. And Donald Trump has basically gotten his butt kicked in court all week long, so I will bring you all of the details on that. Plus, Donald Trump had a fundraiser this past weekend where he promised the millionaires and billionaires in attendance that he would make sure that their taxes remain low if he gets back into office. Because, of course, that's the only thing Republicans know how to do. All of that and so much more is coming up on today's show. And don't forget, you can get the full show every week by signing up and becoming a member at ROFpodcast.com. And you can get Ring of Fire every day of the week on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. At his alleged $50 million fundraiser dinner this past Saturday, Donald Trump told the gathered crowd of wealthy elites that he will continue to fight to keep their taxes low. Because as we all know, that is the most important thing happening in this country right now, is making sure that the wealthy elite do not have to pay their fair share in taxes. And these people that attended Donald Trump's fundraiser dinner that did open their wallets and give him money, that's the only thing they care about. They don't care about immigration. Well, actually, I take that back, because they do. Because, you see, they want that steady supply of cheap labor coming in, but they're willing to overlook that, of course, because, you know, tax cuts. They don't care about the environment. They don't care about inflation, other than when they can use inflation as a disguise to raise the prices on the products that they sell. They don't care that the average working family can't afford an emergency of $700. They don't care that people are having to work two jobs, even though, of course, that number has gone down, thank God. But they don't care about anything. They don't care about the coup attempt. They don't care about the fake electors. They don't care about the Capitol riot. The only thing those people in that room with Donald Trump care about is, what can you do to lower my tax bill? And the sick, twisted part of that is that these are people who, even if they had to pay more in taxes, it doesn't affect them. There were billionaires in that room who applauded Donald Trump telling them, I'm going to fight to lower your taxes even further. It blows my mind. Possibly because I am not a disgustingly selfish human being. So for me, it seems highly irrational for a person to put their own tax bill above the good of the country. Like, they don't care that Donald Trump has made it clear he wants to be a dictator. He has made it clear he is going to go after his political enemies. He has made it clear he is going to go on a revenge tour for 4 years if he gets back in the White House. None of that matters to them, because he may reduce their tax bill by $1, $2 million a year, maybe $10 million a year. Ooh, look at that. I mean, I know I've got $20 billion in the bank, but hey, an extra $2 million a year. Wow, that's great. Sure, I'll sell out our democracy for an extra $2 million a year. Yes, I will starve the federal government of much needed funds so that I can save a couple bucks a year. Money that I won't notice if it's there or not. But I want it, because I don't want somebody else to have it. Because greed is the only thing these people know. The promise of extending the 2017 Trump tax cuts has, of course, now made the rounds online. President Biden even put out a statement talking about how Donald Trump is coddling rich people. But to that, I'm actually going to have to call you out, President Biden. Because you had Democratic control of the House and Senate for your first 2 years in office. Y'all didn't repeal these tax cuts. Did you even try? I mean, as far as I've seen, I do politics all day, every day. I didn't see y'all try to repeal those tax cuts. You didn't. You left them in place. So I'm sorry Biden, but you actually don't have any room to talk on this. Because you could have repealed the tax cuts, but you didn't. Instead, you're like, well, we'll just let them expire next year when they expire. You could have gotten rid of it. You could have given the government more money. We could have had a better infrastructure bill, even though the one we have is pretty good. Still wasn't enough. But you didn't do that. But again, this isn't about Biden. This is about Trump. This is about Republicans. And as I've said a million times, the only thing these people know how to do is cut taxes. It's like Reagan came up with this idea in the 80s, and they're still stuck on it because they got no other ideas. Remember their health care plan, right? The Obamacare replacement that luckily got defeated. Do you know what that really was? It was actually just a package of tax cuts masquerading as health care. It gave massive tax cuts to corporations that aren't even involved in health care, because that is the only thing these people know how to do. So it makes sense that Trump is out there telling them he's going to cut their taxes, because when it comes to Republican ideas outside of the culture wars, the only thing Republicans know how to do is give rich people more money. So outside of, saying that Democrats kill babies this week and, you know, telling rich people that he's going to cut their taxes, Donald Trump actually did something weird. And that weird thing was following his fundraiser on Saturday. Let me take you back to when the fundraiser started, in case you're not familiar with what happened. Donald Trump came out, Melania standing off to his side, making zero emotion on her face. And she stood there solemnly, not moving, while Donald Trump gave his little opening address. And this video made the rounds online, and a lot of people actually said this looked like a hostage video. Melania looked like she would rather be anywhere else on the planet than standing next to her husband. And after Donald Trump was widely mocked all across the internet for that, he posted a video the next day that showed a bunch of clips of Melania, like, giving him a little peck either on the cheek or on the lips. And then most of the clips were actually just Melania being near him. And it was set to the tune of Starship's Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now. You know, because Donald Trump so loves his wife that he has to put out a video reassuring us that she actually tolerates him from time to time. Now, the reason Donald Trump has done this is because for the last, 8 months, everybody's been asking, where's Melania? And we do know for a portion of that, her mother was very sick and she has since passed away. So Melania was dealing with the death of her mother. Trump himself, of course, made one post on social media about it and then just moved on with his life as if nothing happened. So that explains Melania's absence for a period of time, but not the whole time. And so she does pop up every now and then, acting like she supports her husband, when in reality, it's clear that, again, she wants to be anywhere else. Like, she can't stand to be near him. So Trump has, of course, even beyond this weekend, been widely mocked and ridiculed for being trapped in a loveless marriage. And so he puts out this video that is supposed to show us how much she likes him, but if you actually watch the video, like, she still can't stand him. Those were the best clips he could pick, and they still show a woman who acts like she is disgusted anytime you touch her. And for some reason in the video, he also included the clip of her getting onto the helicopter wearing the I really don't care to you jacket. So I'm not sure what he was trying to do with that, but it certainly didn't do Melania any favors. I think it's safe to say at this point that as this campaign moves forward, Melania is not going to be front and center. I mean, she acts like she definitely does not want to go back to the White House. She probably doesn't even want to be in this marriage anymore, but she feels kind of stuck. And honestly, kind of like the rest of us, especially, our Ring of Fire listeners and viewers, y'all probably share the same thoughts as Melania, which is, I hope this guy goes to jail so I never have to deal with him again. More and more problems continue to pile up for the Knight Specialty Insurance Company is the official name of it. But that is the bond company that, of course, paid Donald Trump's $175 million bond for the fraud trial. And because there are so many questions about whether or not this company even has the money to pay the bond if Trump loses, Judge Arthur Engoron has, of course, scheduled a hearing for April 22nd with the bond company because they didn't give him financial information. And for the record, all of that happened at the end of last week. And in the time since, the Daily Beast sent their reporters out there and they uncovered a little bit more about this company that raises serious red flags to the prosecutors and the judge about this company's solvency. For example, this Knight Insurance Company, they're a California company, not a New York company. But according to the rules of the court, in the state of New York, for an insurance company to put up a bond, you actually cannot put up more than 10% of your solvency. Meaning, if you have $1 billion in the bank, the most you can put up in a bond would be $100 million, 10%. However, according to the financial records, it looks like this company only has $138 million in surplus, which means that would be 127% of the bond payment. Or the bond payment would be 127% of that total, excuse me. So, according to their own financial records, they don't have the money. But Knight Insurance, they swear they've got they say they've got $1 billion. We got $1 billion sitting in the bank there. And plus, of course, because we're not a New York company, you know, we probably don't have to adhere to the 10% rule. That's going to be interesting. I can't wait to see what happens when you go and tell the judge that, hey, we're not from around here, so we don't have to abide by the rules. It's going to be a fun argument, but I don't think it's going to be an effective argument. And those are just two, by the way, the solvency of the company and then, of course, the 10% rule. Those are just two of the massive issues that have arisen in the last 4 days with this company. Another one, and this is probably going to be a major one that actually could get the bond thrown out altogether, is that in the contract of the bond company, it clearly states that if Trump loses upon appeal, we're not going to pay. Trump has to pay, which negates the whole point of having an insurance company post the bond, right? I mean, the whole point of having the company do it is to say, if he loses, we have to pay. But then, of course, he has to pay us. They're just saying, look, we're just here to sign paperwork. Okay. If he loses, he's going to pay you. We're not going to give you anything. You can't do that. Okay. Let's make that abundantly clear. You can't do that. And here's the thing. If you think, well, I mean, the judge read it, the judge approved it. Think again, folks. They didn't go through this paperwork, just like with the E. Jean Carroll trial. Remember? Donald Trump's bond company that put up the money added a clause into the contract that said, hey, oh, by the way, he also has 60 days to pay if he loses the appeal. The judge didn't know that at the time. It was pointed out by the plaintiff's lawyers, and they got it stricken upon a second hearing. So things are about to go from bad to worse for Donald Trump with this bond company. And if all these stories are accurate and their solvency is not there, there is an incredibly high likelihood that Donald Trump's bond will be revoked. And that's about to cause him some very serious financial headaches. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham committed the cardinal sin of Trump world this week, which was, of course, to disagree with anything at all that Donald Trump says. And here's what happened. As we all know, Donald Trump released a video earlier this week where he proclaimed that the issue of abortion should be left to the states, while he also bragged about repealing Roe versus Wade with his Supreme Court justices. This was Donald Trump's way of taking a stand on the issue by not actually taking a stand on the issue. But Lindsey Graham disagreed with him, and Lindsey Graham thinks that the federal government should be the one that takes women's rights away from them instead of letting the states do it state by state. So Lindsey Graham responded to Trump's video and said, quote, The states' rights only rationale today runs contrary to an American consensus that would limit late-term abortions and will age about as well as the Dred Scott decision. The science is clear. A child at 15 weeks is well-developed and is capable of feeling pain. I will continue to advocate that there should be a national minimum standard limiting abortion at 15 weeks because the child is capable of feeling pain, with exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. So it's a very mild disagreement, right? I mean, Trump has also, by the way, talked about a 15-week national ban. So technically, Lindsey Graham's not even disagreeing with Trump. He's just disagreeing with the Trump we have this week and agreeing with the Trump that we had a month ago. So a little weird, right? Well, this did not sit well with Donald Trump, who came out and publicly dumped Lindsey Graham. Trump responded in a very long post saying, quote, "Senator Lindsey Graham is doing a great disservice to the Republican Party and to our country. At first, he wanted no abortions under any circumstances. Then he was up to 6 weeks when you're allowed abortion. Now he's up to 15 weeks when you're allowed abortion. But what he doesn't understand, or perhaps he does, is that radical left Democrats who are destroying our country will never approve anything that he or the Republicans want. They love this issue and they want to keep it going for as long as Republicans will allow them to do so. Terminating Roe versus Wade was, according to all legal scholars, a great event. But sometimes with great events come difficulties. Many good Republicans lost elections because of this issue, and people like Lindsey Graham, that are unrelenting, are handing Democrats their dream of the House, Senate, and perhaps even the presidency. Lindsey, Marjorie, and others fought for years unsuccessfully until I came along and got the job done. Then they were gone, never to be heard from again until now. We cannot let our country suffer any further damage by losing elections on an issue that should always have been decided by the states and now will be." For the record, let's just get something straight here. You're like, Marjorie came along and she'd been fighting and then I came along. Marjorie Taylor Greene did not win political office. Like, there was a 2 week overlap between Marjorie Taylor Greene was sworn in and Trump was president of the United States. Like, that's it. She came along technically after Trump. So I don't know what he's talking about saying she was doing this for years. No, she wasn't. She was a CrossFit trainer. Okay. But still, even with that attack on Lindsey Graham wasn't enough. As we all know, Donald Trump's not one to just let something go. So later in the day, he gets back on Truth Social and goes even more ballistic on Lindsey Graham, right? The issue was over. Lindsey Graham said his piece. Trump issued a rebuttal. It was done. And then Trump came back and said this: "I blame myself for Lindsey Graham because the only reason he won in the great state of South Carolina is because I endorsed him. Graham should study the 10th Amendment and states' rights." Lindsey Graham only won re-election because Donald Trump endorsed him, right? It's not like Lindsey Graham's been sitting in the Senate for decades. No. It's totally because of Donald Trump. Lindsey Graham, in spite of what even Democrats may think, was never in danger in South Carolina. Okay? He pulled off a stunning victory against a Democratic candidate who did a great job, but was never going to win in a red state. Let's face it, okay? We gotta acknowledge that that is a red state and Lindsey Graham would have won. That wasn't because of Trump. Like, that is insane for this man to say that. But nevertheless, it looks at least for now that cozy little relationship that Lindsey Graham had with Donald Trump is over. But don't worry. Lindsey will apologize. Lindsey will change his tune. He will agree with Donald Trump and try to get back on his good graces, because that's what a good little lapdog does. We are now just days away from the start of Donald Trump's very first criminal trial, and his lawyers this week have been throwing everything they can against the wall to see what's going to stick. And one of the things they did, which was shot down within 30 minutes after the judge heard arguments about this, took 30 minutes for the judge to come back and say, yeah, I'm not going to do that. So what was this very easy decision for that judge on the appellate court? Well, Donald Trump's lawyers, again, days before the trial set to begin, went up to the court and said, hey, judge, we want to change a venue because, you know, New York is very liberal. Trump is obviously a conservative and a Republican, and we just don't feel like we can get a fair trial here. So how about we just delay this thing indefinitely, and we'll tell you later on where we want to have the trial. Because in their motion to get a change of venue, they didn't even bother to list other potential venues where they could have the trial, which, by the way, is something you have to do. And they just didn't do it because that's how bad his lawyers are. So again, it took the judge less than 30 minutes to come back with her decision saying, no, like, if you wanted a change of venue, you could have done that literally any time in the last year, but you didn't. Because let's not forget, these charges in New York were brought against Donald Trump last April. So it has been 12 months that these charges have been against him. We have had months and months and months of hearings going all the way back to last year, where at any point, Trump's lawyers could have brought up, hey, New York is liberal, our client is not, they don't like him here, we can't get a fair trial, let's move this somewhere else. Here's five different places we could try. They didn't do it. Which, of course, is why they're now in full desperation mode. They don't know what to do. I think deep down, Donald Trump never thought it would get to this point. I think he honestly believed he would be able to continue to push these trials off indefinitely. He'd never have to deal with them. He'd become president again and make all his problems go away. I don't think he'd ever thought he'd have to go to court. And now he is. A few days away at this point. And because his lawyers keep failing, this was not the only motion the judges struck down this week. It does look like right now, Trump will be heading into court in Manhattan on Monday for his first criminal trial. A federal judge this week that has been serving on the bench since he was appointed by Ronald Reagan in 1987 decided that he's had enough of these Capitol rioters that have come into his courtroom and said, oh, gee, I'm sorry. And then, of course, you get all the supporters of the Capitol rioters, their friends and families writing letters saying, oh, he's a good guy. She's a great gal. You shouldn't punish this person for storming the Capitol. And in this particular case this week, threatening to murder lawmakers if they had seen them in the Capitol. So this judge, Royce Lamberth, a conservative judge, been there for 37 years at this point, which is a little too long if you ask me. But Lamberth has had enough. So he wrote a letter to all the friends and family and supporters of this convicted Capitol rioter who had voiced their support for him, ordered his clerk to mail out 20 copies of the letter to 20 different people that were supporting this guy. And in the letter, he said, quote, January 6th must not become a precedent for further violence against political opponents or governmental institutions. This is not normal. This cannot become normal. We as a community, we as a society, we as a country cannot condone the normalization of the January 6th Capitol riot. Now, this letter, 20 copies, as I said, sent to the friends and family of this particular defendant, who, of course, has been found guilty and will be going to prison. But this message was not for the friends and family of this Capitol rioter. It was not for the friends and family of other convicted Capitol rioters. No. This letter, the publicity surrounding it, and I think the judge knows this full well, and this is why the judge did it. This isn't a message to the family members. This is a message to the Republicans in Congress and to Donald Trump himself to stop condoning the actions of these people. Stop downplaying the actions that these people took this week. I mean, hell, we even had Bobby Kennedy come out in the last couple days and say, well, I'm going to investigate, you know, the politicization of the prosecutions and see if that actually happened. The judges are telling you, even the conservative judges are telling you, that didn't happen. If anything, the judges have told us, these Capitol rioters are getting off too light. They're getting special treatment when they shouldn't be. When the judges, especially when these conservative ones, speak out against what the rest of their party is saying, we should listen. These are people that are trained, and Lamberth, as I said, been there 37 years. He's seen it all, done it all. He knows when people are lying to him. He knows when somebody has genuinely made a mistake and feels remorse for it. They're telling us these people don't have actual remorse. It's a show, and they need to be punished accordingly. And again, if you ask me, that's something that we all need to be listening to. Donald Trump may have a very serious problem with a recent fundraiser that he attended. It was not a fundraiser that he put on, but it was put on by a nonprofit group called Border 911, which was actually founded last year by Donald Trump's former Immigration and Customs Enforcement Chief, Tom Homan. And Mr. Homan had this fundraiser. It was tickets were $1,200 up to $100,000 to raise money for his nonprofit group that's not allowed to be involved in politics. They can only push issues, not parties or candidates. And he invited Donald Trump, the Republican nominee for president, to speak at his nonprofit fundraiser. Now, if you do not understand why that series of words that I just said might be illegal, let me explain it a little bit better. Border 911 is registered with the IRS as a 501c3 organization. They are nonprofit. You ain't got to pay taxes. Wonderful for them, right? Because they're an advocacy group. We're just pushing the issue. We don't like people coming into the country illegally, so we encourage voters to vote on that issue. We're not endorsing a party. We're not endorsing a candidate. Because if we do that, that is illegal, and we will get taxed on all the money we have raised. And if any of the money we raised went to some of the people who, I don't know, may have spoken at our event, like Donald Trump, they will be taxed on that as well and possibly face other criminal issues. So, yeah, I'd say it's a big problem when a nonprofit group invites the political, the nominee for a major political party to come speak at their event, especially when you already had an existing relationship with that individual by serving in their administration. And if politics were discussed at your event, that would also violate that law. Now, as it stands right now, we do not have audio of Donald Trump's speech. We do not have video of Donald Trump's speech. We don't have a transcript. But if he got up on that stage, if anybody did, including Vivek Ramaswamy, who also spoke, if they pushed a political party, if they pushed a certain candidate over a different candidate, or any candidate even running unopposed, that's illegal. So I think this is a pretty big deal. But you know who doesn't think it's a big deal? Mr. Homan and his lawyer. Because here is the statement they said. Homan told ABC News that any problematic messaging was unintentional. He then added, "We're making changes quickly to ensure we stay in compliance with federal rules." His lawyer said this: "They understand now that they can't endorse a candidate either overtly or covertly. Anything improper that may have happened is inadvertent. It's not intentional. And Tom is very committed to cleaning it up. As a former law enforcement official, he wants to follow the law." And then they said, "But we're also trying to make a 501c4 organization that can, of course, get involved in politics." So you want to be involved in politics. You know, you kind of been treading that thin line. And you're like, but if we did it, totally didn't mean to. So, you know, it's not illegal. Yeah, it is. Inadvertent or not. In fact, you know what? I don't even want to give you the benefit of the doubt. You invited Donald Trump, the Republican nominee, to speak at your event. Like, you didn't think it was going to be political to do that? Did you invite President Biden to also speak? No, you didn't. So, pretty sure you knew exactly what you were doing. And I'm pretty sure you need to be under federal investigation at this point, because it seems like you've raised a lot of money that at this point definitely needs to be taxed. And that's it for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire podcast. But don't forget, you can get the full show every week by signing up and becoming a member at ROFpodcast.com.